We are in big trouble with respect to the petroleum that fuels our economy. On the one hand, petroleum costs a lot of money and leaves us dependent on others who would gladly blow us to kingdom come if only they could figure out how. On the other hand, petroleum pollutes our environment. To calculate the real cost of gasoline, for example, we would have to add a dollar to each gallon we burn because that is how much damage is caused to our bodies and to our environment. Yes, we are in big trouble with respect to the petroleum that fuels our economy, and so today we ask, is there a real alternative to gasoline?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 624th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there on Hokkaido who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metroforum.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Producer Carol Stafford.
Hello.
And Parmley Taft.
Hello.
Folks, early one morning, the better part of a decade ago, I was reading an article entitled The New Petroleum by Richard Luger and James Woolsey. They claimed that cellulosic or in the new petroleum, Luger and Woolsey argued that the United States should stop buying foreign oil and instead use cellulosic ethanol to fuel its economy. They claimed that cellulosic or biomass ethanol could be produced from almost any type of plant or agriculture waste, and that it's environmentally friendly, is compatible with the existing infrastructure, and it would make a very potent gasoline. But the best part is cellulosic ethanol would allow us to farm our way to energy independence. Wow, I thought. But just as I was thinking that, I heard my wife exclaim, "Oh my God." I ran out to the kitchen to see if she had chopped a finger off and found her staring into the television. Because you see, on that morning, September 11th, 2001, our world changed forever. I have been following the evolution of cellulosic ethanol ever since, and always with the questions, is cellulosic ethanol a real alternative to gasoline? And can we farm our way to energy independence? Here to help us look for an answer today, we have Jason Hill, who is a PhD researcher at the University of Minnesota's Department of Applied Economics. Jason, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you very much for having me.
So tell me, is it really the dismal science?
Well, I'm actually in the ecologist by background, so don't let that go too far.
Okay, so you don't have to be involved too much in the dismal science then.
Yes, but what's interesting to me is that intersection of all these different areas of study, and it really reaches a confluence here in issues of food and energy.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jason, I ran across you when somebody sent me your article, Climate Change and Health Costs of Air Emissions from Biofuels and Gasoline. Now, that sounds like something to read yourself to sleep at night with, right?
It was a labor of love. There's a good 3 years of work that went into this paper, but you know, we were just fascinated by the results, and found that a lot of other people have been really interested in these issues too.
Well, I found it pretty fascinating, and let's talk a little bit about what exactly the study was so that people can get past the title and see what you're really looking at there.
Sure. So there's been a lot of work that's been done on the direct production cost of cellulosic ethanol. And I know you've had Charlie Wyman on your show, and Lee Lind, and a lot of excellent researchers who had looked at the conversion technologies and making cellulosic ethanol cost effective. But what we were looking at are the external costs. Those are those costs that producers and consumers of fuels don't pay, but rather society or the public as a whole pays.
Taxpayers, in other words, right?
You know, taxpayers, and you know, anyone mm-hmm. who's exposed to these pollutants, or anyone who lives on a planet affected by global climate change, which I believe is all of us.
Mm-hmm.
These are the external costs.
There are two costs. The cost that actually costs to make cellulosic ethanol, or the costs what happens because you have this technology, right?
Yeah, because you have it, and because you use it, because you produce the fuels, and because you use them. And so these are health costs associated with air pollutants, or costs from greenhouse gases that are emitted causing climate change that can lead to increased disease or loss of crop productivity and so forth.
Well, good. We always ask, who pays for your way? And so who paid for this study?
We are funded entirely by the University of Minnesota through a grant from the state of Minnesota. So mm-hmm. there's no money coming either from agricultural interests or big oil.
So you had no industry that's trying to justify itself by commissioning a study.
We are completely independent researchers. So I can honestly say that there's no big money, big ag or big oil behind our studies.
Okay, well, let's talk about energy, and let's talk about hydrocarbons and carbohydrates, because most of the time when I mention cellulosic ethanol, people's eyes get crossed and they kind of think I'm out there someplace in Never Never Land. But let's talk about our energy, and let's start with petroleum, which of course is a hydrocarbon, right?
Yes, exactly.
And why do we use petroleum? Why do we use hydrocarbons?
We use hydrocarbons because they're very efficient and portable and relatively cheap forms of energy. So we can extract them from the ground. We know how to refine them and use them in transportation for home heating and so forth. So they're very good forms of dense energy.
Would it be fair to say the world runs on petroleum?
Without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. And where is this energy? Where is it stored?
It's stored underground in oil reserves. And when we use it, we are, of course, depleting those reserves.
Mm-hmm.
And, there are concerns over peak oil and so forth. But there are a number of reasons, even if we had infinite supplies of oil, that we might be concerned about using it, such as environmental concerns and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the introduction to today's show, I mentioned two costs. One, the cost of actually buying hydrocarbons, and the other is the cost of what those hydrocarbons do in our environment. I know you tackled the second issue, but let's talk briefly about the first issue. James Woolsey and Richard Lugar said in their article that two-thirds of the world's remaining oil is stashed under the sands of the Middle East.
There are tremendous stores still in the Middle East. We even have domestic stores still. We have
coal
technologies. Exactly. We could have coal to liquid technology that mm-hmm. would allow us to produce liquid hydrocarbons from coal. So there are a lot of options out there, but the question is, what are the direct costs and environmental costs of pulling that oil from the ground?
Well, let's talk about the environmental costs of hydrocarbons. Start with the environment. Of course, we're all familiar with greenhouse gases, but there's another pollutant there too, right?
Mm-hmm. There are other pollutants when you burn these fuels. You get all sorts of health pollutants like fine particulate matter. You have ozone-forming molecules. You have toxins such as benzene. So there are a lot of other costs as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that would be hydrocarbons. What about carbohydrates?
Carbohydrates are also formed from plant and growth, only much more recent plant growth than mm-hmm. the hydrocarbons underground.
So it's like what's underground. It's like the black stuff that we think of in terms of hydrocarbons, but carbohydrates are the fresh stuff, right?
The fresh stuff, exactly. So they are a renewable source of mm-hmm. energy and of carbon, our building blocks of life. But we have to also figure in whenever we're using those carbohydrates, whether we're using hydrocarbons to produce them.
Ah. So if we can get energy out of hydrocarbons, why can't we get energy out of carbohydrates?
Well, we certainly can. Ultimately, what we eat provides us
right.
with the hydrocarbons and the proteins and the fats that that power us and give us the building blocks for our cells. But those carbohydrates can also be used in various forms to provide the heat and power that we need to run our daily lives.
And that's what we want to talk with when we come back. Folks, we live on hydrocarbons, but can we switch that to carbohydrates? Because those hydrocarbons are all stashed under the sands of the Middle East, and they are very messy, and they're messing up our world. So can we take it upon ourselves to grow our way to energy independence? What do you think? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. We've got Jason Hill, who is a research associate with the University of Minnesota's Department of Applied Economics. And, of course, we have you. Pick up your phones and join us. Can we farm our way to energy independence?
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, we are in big trouble with respect to the petroleum that fuels our economy. On the one hand, it costs so much money to buy it, and the people that we have to buy it from really would just as soon blow us to smithereens if they could figure out how to do that. And on the other hand, when we do get it, we burn it, and it makes a mess of our environment, and it sickens our environment, and it sickens our body. So can we find a legitimate alternative to gasoline? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. We have Jason Hill with us today to help find an answer. Jason is a research associate in the University of Minnesota's Department of Applied Economics. And somehow an ecologist got into the Department of Econ, right, Jason? Oops, I got to press the magic button here. There you go. So somehow you found yourself in the Department of Economics as a ecologist?
Yes, I got in through another professor who has a joint appointment in both departments.
Ah.
Really, this intersection of ecological economics and food and energy that is just so exciting to be working in.
Well, okay, we're talking about the difference between hydrocarbon energy. Of course, we're talking about petroleum and coal as opposed to carbohydrate energy, which is a relatively... Not a relatively new thing, because I understand that Henry Ford, when he built his first cars, figured that he would be fueling them with ethanol. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And so it's not really a new thing we're thinking about. So why are we thinking about it now?
Well, we're thinking about it now because we're increasingly aware of these costs associated with producing oil, both the direct costs that we pay at the pump, but also the environmental and health costs. And we want to do whatever we can to minimize those and maybe move our transportation system onto a less polluting and cheaper energy source.
Well, I can't think of anybody who would disagree with that, except for perhaps the shareholders of oil companies and those who happen to be living on top of vast pools of hydrocarbon energy in the Middle East. But the rest of us are going, please help, let's find something else. So we're looking to carbohydrates. And essentially, we're looking at two kinds of carbohydrate energies. Is that not true? We're looking at green energy or corn ethanol, and we're looking at cellulosic ethanol. So perhaps you could give us a thumbnail of the difference, Jason.
Sure. So in the food sources you mentioned, like ethanol made from corn, what we're doing is taking the starch of the kernel breaking it down into its individual sugars.
Isn't that a waste of good whiskey?
It does seem a shame, doesn't it? But yet we also need to fill our tanks in
right.
one form or the other. So we break them down into their sugars. We ferment those, distill them, producing ethanol. In the cellulosic case, what we're doing is we're taking another carbohydrate, cellulose, which is also made up of sugars. It's the same sugars, essentially just linked together slightly differently, same sugars as in starches.
Now, with respect to cellulose, it's like the material God put on Earth to hold everything together, right?
Well, it is the material that makes up everything that's held together, too.
Mm-hmm.
It is ultimately the source of our food and energy.
Now, to understand the sugars in cellulose, they must be packed really tightly together or something, right?
They're linked together in chains, and those chains form bigger chains, and those form the cell walls of plants
mm-hmm.
that ultimately are the source of food and energy.
Now, it's more difficult. I guess there's two different processes for getting the sugars out, right?
That's true. And starches are...
Like found in corn,
are the reserves that plants use. They put them in their seeds to give the embryo of the next generation of plant a good boost
mm-hmm.
Of food when they're put in the ground and grow.
It's like sending the kid to college.
Exactly, a little fun. So it's like sending a little care package.
Right.
And those can be readily broken down and used by the embryo to grow. But cellulose is different. Plants have evolved to produce cellulose in ways that is very resistant to being broken down because it forms the structure of
mm-hmm.
plants. So they're very, even though they're the same building blocks, they're used for very different
very
purposes.
Very different. Now, is the energy confined to cellulose equivalent to the energy stored in starch?
Yes, there's a tremendous amount of energy stored in both forms.
Okay. Now, what about other forms of bioenergy besides grain ethanol and cellulosic ethanol?
So there are other ways of converting biomass to biofuels. So you can gasify it, which is essentially producing carbon monoxide and other gases
mm-hmm.
that recombine to form fuels. But there are also other options, such as algae that can produce fats that could be used to produce biodiesel.
Hmm. Any other thing that's a legitimate alternative to gasoline?
I get the sense you're leading me onto something here, but it's not coming up to mind right now.
Okay, good. Well, let's turn to your study then. You gave us your objective, which was to measure the other costs involved in these energies. And when you talk about the other costs, we're not talking about the actual cost of like buying hydrocarbons from the Middle East or the actual cost of converting corn into ethanol or converting cellulose into ethanol. You're talking about the other costs, the cost to the environment, the cost to our bodies.
Exactly right. So we know that the release of greenhouse gas affects climate change. We know that air pollutants affect our health. But if we're going to really understand which fuels are in the best interest of society to develop, we need to be able to quantify those environmental damages and put them in a metric, a common unit of comparison, and we chose the dollar.
Okay, now, when I introduced this program, I stole the figure from your study, and it said that to calculate the real cost of a gallon of gasoline, we would have to add a dollar to that gallon, because when we burn it, it causes a dollar's worth of environmental and physical health damage.
Yes, it causes almost a dollar's worth when we look at just the fine particulate matter and the greenhouse gases emitted. Now, there are other things that will contribute as well to the pollution that's caused, but those are the two big ones that have been found and the ones that we focused on in our study. Now, there are other costs of petroleum as well, cost, for instance, of national interest and so forth. But
right.
What we were looking at were the environmental costs.
Okay, well, how on earth do you go about figuring that out?
That's a challenging one. Let me just focus on the greenhouse gas side for right now.
All right.
We know what quantities of greenhouse gases are released when we produce and use different fuels, like gasoline or corn ethanol or cellulosic.
So ethanol. We can measure.
We can measure. So we measure quantities, mm-hmm. like how many tons are released when you produce a gallon or so. Actually, it's more on the order for gasoline of about 25 pounds of CO2 per gallon of gasoline. But then we sort of use three different ways of valuing that amount of carbon that's released. And one of them is to look at the price of carbon markets, so what is carbon trading for as a commodity. Another is the cost of not releasing carbon, so what's the cost of making technologies that prevent the release. But ultimately, what we want to know is what is the damage cost caused by that carbon. And that is called the social cost of carbon. And what that is what economists have figured the future damages arising from, say, sea level rise or increased disease or loss of crop productivity in highly productive areas due to climate change.
And now, since you're running around with a bunch of bespectacled economists, there must be a lot of number crunching involved in this, right?
There's a lot of number crunching. There are a lot of very good economists working on that. There are many studies out there that have looked at these future costs and what they're predicted to be.
Okay, when we get back, we're going to look at the actual costs of burning a billion gallons of gasoline and a billion gallons of corn ethanol and a billion gallons of cellulosic ethanol. And you folks are going to be truly amazed at which comes in the least expensive. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Jason Hill. And you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Can we farm our way to energy independence? Right back. Well, Michael Olson's third rule of the food chain goes something like this: cheap food isn't. And you know, when it gets right down to it, energy is kind of like that too. There's one cost for energy, and that's the cost we pay for it. But there are other costs that we don't really calculate, and those are the costs for the damage these fuels cause to our environment and to our bodies. And so today, we're looking at the other costs of energy, and we're looking at specifically three kinds of energy with Jason Hill, who is a research associate with the University of Minnesota's Department of Applied Economics. Jason, we were talking about how your study looked at the other costs of three different forms of energy: gasoline, corn ethanol, and cellulosic ethanol. And we've learned that there is a substantial difference between corn ethanol and cellulosic ethanol. And, of course, a lot of difference between the carbohydrates of ethanol and the petroleum of hydrocarbons of gasoline. But let's talk about the difference that you found when you looked at these three things, these three fuels. What are the costs, the other costs of these forms of energy?
Sure. So what we did is we looked at what the costs from greenhouse gas emissions and this fine particulate matter that causes health damage.
So two kinds of stuff.
Two different, very important kinds of air pollution damages.
Okay, and one is greenhouse gas, and that's the stuff that rises in the atmosphere and burns a hole into the ozone layer. And
those are very different things. The hole in the ozone layer is caused by something else altogether. The greenhouse gases are responsible for climate change.
We could call them Al Gore gases.
That would be a very good term for them. So these are carbon dioxide and methane and nitrous oxide are the big three that are followed there.
Okay.
And so we looked at the combined costs of those greenhouse gases and fine particulate matter, and we found that for increasing our national supply of each by about a billion gallons, it would cost about $470 million for gasoline.
Okay, so let's stop right there. So for the other costs of burning $1 billion of gasoline, it would cost an additional $470 million darn near half.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a major cost.
So almost 50 cents a gallon there, right?
Yeah, it actually works out to a little more. I should say we looked at the cost of a billion gallons of ethanol, so that would be equivalent to about 670 million gallons of gasoline. So there's some math there, and that's because ethanol has two-thirds the energy content of gasoline.
Yes.
So, but essentially what we found is that the cost of gasoline were almost about $500 million for a billion gallons of gasoline equivalent ethanol, and about that for corn ethanol, maybe even slightly higher depending on how you produce it.
Well, your numbers say 472 million to 952 million.
Exactly, and the high end there is for coal-burning ethanol plants, of which there aren't many, but it depends
on how you make the corn ethanol, how dirty it gets.
Depends on how you make it, and those costs could be much higher. But they're certainly no better than gasoline.
And then for cellulosic ethanol?
Cellulosic, you're getting down into the range of about 100 million to 200 million. So a lot less than that of gasoline.
Not a little less.
Well, a lot less. So, yeah, sorry, it's my Minnesotan understatedness here, maybe.
So for corn ethanol, you're looking maybe an average of $700 million for a billion gallons. And for cellulosic ethanol, you're looking in the average $150 million for a billion gallons.
Mm-hmm.
So that's huge. That's not a little difference. That's a huge difference.
Those are very large differences. That's correct.
So why does cellulosic ethanol cost less than corn ethanol?
Well, there are two major reasons. One is that with cellulosic ethanol, the greenhouse gas emissions are lower, and that's because less fossil fuel, less hydrocarbons, are used in producing them. And you can even use part of the carbohydrate, part of the biomass that's produced, to provide heat and power to the ethanol facility. So the sort of self-sufficiency within a biorefinery, as we call it. And the other reason is that on the land itself, you're not plowing up the ground year after year. You have perennial crops, and those are much better for storing carbon in soils and building soils. And on the health side, what's happening there is that with the cellulosic ethanol, you're burning less fossil fuels, which has less air pollution consequences, as well as at the ethanol refineries themselves, you're offsetting coal use and natural gas use, which can actually also benefit human health.
A whole bunch of reasons.
A lot of reasons there.
Why cellulosic ethanol costs somewhere pretty close to almost one-fifth the cost of corn ethanol
in terms of
the damage done to our environment.
It could be as low. Now I want to add one caveat to all this,
mm-hmm.
and that's that if you increase supplies of gasoline or cellulosic ethanol or corn ethanol much greater than a billion gallons, you could see these costs increase in all cases. In the petroleum case, if we're moving into these tar sands, they're very dirty to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of corn ethanol, if you're displacing crops into other areas and causing deforestation, and in the case of cellulosic ethanol, if you're also causing deforestation and loss of crops. So
there's lots of ways of making it more expensive than you found.
There are lots of ways, and so what we need to do is in the case of cellulosic ethanol, look at lands that are not currently in crop production for degraded lands, the severely degraded lands that might be used for that.
So the corn industry has received, you know, several hundred trillion dollars worth of subsidies over, you know, I don't know how much, but a lot of money over the last decade or so to generate corn ethanol. What do they say about your look at these costs?
They obviously they don't like our research. I hope it's not personal, but of course I grew up in the farm here in Minnesota, so I certainly appreciate where our food comes from, and and know that there's going to be rising demand, as I'm sure you've covered in your show many times, rising demand for food, and we need ways to produce it more efficiently. So, you know, there's some initial reaction, but I think when we have a good dialogue going, we see that there are ways of doing things better.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to go to the telephones. And Tony has a good question, and hopefully will spur your phone calls, too. Phone number is 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Today, we're asking, is there a real alternative to gasoline? Folks, it's costing us a lot of money to buy it and a lot of money to pay for the damages that it does to our environment. Is there another way? Can we grow our way to energy self-sufficiency? We've got Jason Hill, who did an incredible study, an incredible look at the other costs of energy. He's with the University of Minnesota's Department of Applied Economics. And we have you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back. Please do stay tuned. Well, we're back, and we're talking about a legitimate alternative to gasoline. Is there one? Would cellulosic ethanol be that case? There are two kinds of ethanols, grain and cellulosic. And Jason Hill from the University of Minnesota has been telling us about a study he did about the other costs involved in our energy sources. Gasoline, we looked at gasoline, we looked at grain ethanol, and we looked at cellulosic ethanol, and we learned, much to our surprise, that the other costs involved in gasoline, for example, is just about 50 cents a gallon. And corn ethanol, the other costs, the environmental costs, are somewhere in the neighborhood of 75 cents a gallon. And cellulosic ethanol is down somewhere around 15 cents a gallon. So you see, cellulosic ethanol would be a lot less expensive than grain ethanol made from corn. And in that regard, we have Tony on the line, and Tony wants to ask a question about sugar beets. Tony, welcome to the food chain.
Good morning. I actually have three questions. Well, one comment and two questions.
First, fire away.
First, the comment, the American Le Mans series, which is a sports car racing series in the United States and also competes in the 24-hour Le Mans, actually uses cellulosic ethanol now in their race cars.
Wow.
And they started the program last year, and they're proving it successful. My question is, why hasn't anyone considered sugar beets? Because back in the 60s and 70s, sugar beets at the time was considered probably the highest source for energy reproduction and conversion into fuel.
Well, let's ask Jason Hill. Nobody seems
to talk about it.
Jason?
Yeah, that's a good question, and they're actually doing that over in Britain and in Europe. So the question there is that with sugar beets, we're again using our best prime farmland for fuel production. So we do need to try to find other crops, and these cellulosic crops are very good at growing on land that's much less fertile and at lower water requirements than, say, sugar beets or corn.
Because all you need is cellulose, right?
Well, yeah, you need the cellulose. We've bred crops like sugar beets and corn for their food value, and they're ideally suited for that. But these other biomass crops are much better suited if we can get the conversion technology priced low enough to fuel production.
Okay.
All right.
Tony?
Yes, thank you. And my other question, one more, and I'm out of here. Have you calculated in any way the miles per gallon used by any of these crops, types of sources, and relationship to gasoline? And have you calculated that over 100,000 miles or a million miles or anything like that in usage costs?
That's a good question, but with all due respect, the Jason Hill study was looking at the other costs instead of the direct costs of, I mean, miles per gallon and, you know, what it costs to buy oil from the Middle East and so on. Jason was really looking at the environmental costs of polluting our environment, the greenhouse gases, the particulate matter that wreak havoc on our environment and our bodies. So he was looking at those costs. But that being the case, Jason, do you have any idea about the miles per gallon issue?
You know, I can't pull those numbers off the top of my head, but I know that there have been some really good public interest groups that have taken the numbers that scientists have come up with for how many acres are needed to run a car a mile on different fuels, and have translated those into numbers that can be very accessible to the public. So I would go online and Google some of these keywords like miles per gallon and ethanol and acres and see what comes up.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Tony. And so there it is. We've got Tony there. Okay, so it seems like gasoline is the least favorable alternative, no matter how you look at it. Am I wrong?
Well, again, it depends on a number of factors. It depends on what sort of volumes we're looking at of these different fuels. And I will say that there's something that we haven't talked about yet, and that's a cost that can be avoided. And those are costs from energy conservation and efficiency. And
what do you mean we can avoid them?
We don't have to pay these costs of 15 cents a gallon or $1 a gallon.
Oh, you mean we can just pollute the environment and our bodies and not pay the costs?
Pollute the environment and our bodies? Well, by not using fuels at all. It will not at all, but to use...
What would we eat for breakfast?
A billion gallons less.
Yeah, what would we eat for breakfast?
Well, we have a food production system, and that does incur costs. But I'm talking about the costs for transportation energy here.
Mm-hmm.
And so there.
Do you think we can actually avoid those costs?
We can. Well, I can give you an example right here.
Please.
If we were to gain, let's take the case of corn ethanol. If we convert every corn kernel in this nation to ethanol, we would offset 12%. Of our gasoline usage. So even if we were to use, say, a billion gallons less gasoline, and we use about a little more than 150 billion gallons now, those would be environmental costs from gasoline production that we would avoid.
Gotcha.
I'm talking about food, I'm talking about transportation here. So conservation efficiency would let us reduce those costs, environmental and health.
Okay, one more quick break when we come back. Corn is more costly than gasoline and cellulosic ethanol, but it is here. Cellulosic ethanol is cleaner and less expensive than gasoline and grain ethanol, but is it here yet? How much longer will we have to wait for cellulosic ethanol to rescue us from what is going on in our world? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, we'll be right back. Do stay tuned. Well, when it gets right down to it, there are the costs of buying things, and then there are the costs of what those things do after you burn them. Gasoline, for example, costs so much money, but it also costs another 50 cents a gallon for the damage it does to the environment and to our bodies. Corn ethanol, up to 75 cents per gallon for what it does to our environment and does to our bodies. Cellulosic ethanol, only about 15 cents. That, according to a study by Jason Hill and Associates at the University of Minnesota. So we look at the future. We see that corn ethanol is more costly than gasoline and cellulosic ethanol, but it is here, and we're making a lot of juice out of it. Cellulosic ethanol is cleaner, less expensive, and decentralized, but an economic way of producing it is not quite here yet, or at least we don't know of any. And how much longer will we have to wait before cellulosic ethanol is a legitimate alternative to gasoline? Jason?
Well, the joke is, among the biofuel researchers, is that it's always 5 years away.
It seems like it. I've been looking at this ever since September 11th, 2001. And I had James Woolsey on, I think, my first show. And I've been working with researchers ever since. And that always seems to be the answer. It's always 5 years away.
But there are some things that are changing, and one is that there are literally billions of dollars now that are being invested from public and private sources into finding cheap conversion technologies, cheap enzymes to break down cellulose.
So that's what we're really looking for, is the magic enzyme, aren't we?
We're looking for the magic enzyme, the magic technology. But the other big piece of the equation is the price of oil. And when gasoline is at $4 a gallon, it's a very different scenario for if cellulosic ethanol is going to be competitive in the market than when gasoline is at $2 a gallon.
Right.
So those are the...
Is that why gasoline is at $2 a gallon now, do you think?
Well, I filled up my pump here in Minnesota, my tank, for $1.89 the other day. So,
is that why gasoline is cheap, to keep cellulosic ethanol in the background?
Boy, I would hate to say, subscribe
right.
to a conspiracy theory there, but I do know that demand for gasoline has gone way down with the economy. So there are underlying factors there too.
Mm-hmm. So as a researcher, how long is this going to take us to make cellulosic ethanol a viable alternative?
You know, it's
don't tell me 5 years, please, Jason.
It's only 5 years. Well, I'll tell you. Let's just see what happens to the price of oil. Mm-hmm. Let's see what happens to public programs to subsidize fuels. And we'll see if it can become competitive. There are, however, laws. It's codified into law, the Energy Independence and Security Act, that cellulosic ethanol will be produced in very large volumes.
So we're striving for it, we're looking for it, we're reaching for it, we're praying for it, but it just isn't quite here yet.
Well,
another 5 years.
Well, let's see.
Okay, Jason Hill, Research Associate, University of Minnesota's Department of Applied Economics. Thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Thank you out there for tuning in this edition of The Food Chain. What do you think? Will we be able to farm our way to energy independence? Go to the forums at metrofarm.com and log in what you think. Love to hear from you. And we hope to see you all next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on The Food Chain. And remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.